Drivers, start your engines!
To the folks, Snoop Doggy Dogg and Dr. Dre is at the door, ready to make an entrance, so back on up,
cause you know we're about to rip shit up.
Give me the microphone first so I can bust like a bubble. Compton and Long Beach together.
Okay, hey, IndyCar fans, in between our recording and our upload of this episode, there was some breaking news that came out that affects the point standing significantly. It's huge news. So we're going to go ahead and roll our race review, but if you're interested, stick around toward the end and we'll get into it. Thanks for joining us on this podcast. We are going to discuss, review, talk about the Acura Grand Prix of Long Beach.
Yeah, this was another thrilling race. Came right down to the wire, as IndyCar races tend to do. I mean, it's pretty amazing that just when you think it's settled in, all of a sudden, you know, a fight for the lead breaks out and we have a race that comes all the way down to the last lap. There's a lot to get into. We had a yellow that sort of threw the race on its head, flipped the field into two different strategies. I guess just a lot of action in between. So you were there, obviously. I had to watch this one on TV, but I think this is going to be a really good episode. I'm psyched to dig into the details of this race.
Yeah, the race was great. And, you know, I was there. I got there Saturday morning early. Got to go see practice. I got there for qualifying. Hung around the track all day Saturday afternoon, which is a blast. There's I haven't been there in so long. And when I did it before, I guess things are probably different. I don't know. I mean, now in between like turn six and turn eight, sort of near the back, there's a couple bars like right along the track. So Saturday afternoon when the Robbie Gordon trucks were going, you could sit in this little Mexican bar and look out the window and see the trucks pop up in the air. So that was pretty fun. There was, I got sunburned. It was cloudy most of the day Saturday, so I didn't feel the sun, but man, I got charged. So Sunday after the warm up, before the race started, I decided to go sit inside and found this really cool place. I forget what they call the village, Shoreline Village, maybe. This is all inside the track grounds, you know, once you're in. And there's a couple restaurants and bars. So I sat in this little place called Shenanigans, which was really cool and had a good bloody. And so, yeah, it was just a good vibe. I mean, you're looking out over the harbor and the crowds were great. So sort of odd, though. Saturday, the IndyCar qualifying was over and I forget what time it was, but it felt really early in the day. It might have been before 2 o'clock. And most of the people hadn't even gotten there yet. And there's no more IndyCar on track. So, you know, they were watching the IMSA stuff and the trucks. And I felt like it was a little bit of a missed opportunity. Just not enough eyes on IndyCar. But then Sunday, the crowd was huge. So, you know, they know their stuff there. You know, there are a lot of good race fans there.
Yeah, I believe it. I wish I could have been there. I've never been to that race actually, but been on a little vacation to Puerto Rico this week, but I was still pretty glued to the TV. I mean, I watched as much of practice as I could, qualifying, watched the morning warm up and everything. And then obviously was fully tuned into the race. I had timing and scoring open. I had onboards on my phone and everything. So yeah, not surprised. It was a great atmosphere. It always looks like it.
Yeah, I was hoping to do some networking. I had a paddock pass, which I didn't really use on Saturday. Sunday morning, they stayed in this dive hotel right there by the track. It was a total dive. But then I walked over to the Westin for breakfast. And that was kind of the jackpot. Where, you know, I'm sitting there eating at the breakfast bar right next to Rinus VK, and like Pelot's in there, Erickson's in there. I mean, I didn't want to, there was everybody. Drivers were walking up and getting coffee. On race day, I just didn't really feel like pestering anybody. So sat there and ate my eggs Benedict and observed, but it was kind of funny, like left the breakfast place to go into the track for warm up and kind of follow. Erickson's all by himself and he's got his little briefcase and he's walking into the track along with everybody else, all the other fans. He's walking in all by himself. I don't think anybody would even know who he was. It was just kind of funny to observe, but that was pretty cool. That part of the, you know, the Sunday morning thing, just being right in there. But yeah, I guess we should eventually start talking about the race here.
Well, yeah, I mean, super interesting race. Dixon obviously won in very Scott Dixon like fashion in massive fuel save from the yellow that sort of turned the race on its head onwards. The same strategy shot Will Power in the foot. I think it was totally the wrong call to bring them in, but obviously it worked for Dixon. And a lot in between. I mean, you had Newgarden right there at the end and Herta right there at the end, the pack kind of closing up. So there's a lot to get into. I don't know if we want to talk about practice and qualifying at all, or if we just want to go into the race itself. I mostly just have notes on the race.
Yeah, let's just get into the race. You know, you talked about how the strategy, the same strategy didn't really work out for Power like it did for Dixon. That was obvious, but they were in two totally different situations, really. I mean, unfortunately, Power had to give up an enormous lead when the yellow came out, and he was on green tires, and Dixon had been conservative. I mean, I don't know if you want to just talk about this now or go chronologically and talk about it when it happens in the race, but it was two different things, and clearly the Honda engine got way better fuel consumption, as you could see who the people, you know, how they, the people who tried that alternate strategy, the Chevys, a couple of them gave up on it, and it was just a whole different thing, I think, for the guys with the Chevys. But yeah, why don't we just start from the start?
Also, let's just give an overview of what the strategy is had the race stayed green like we usually do. I think usually it's pretty straightforward. I mean, if it's green flag start to finish, then two stops are king. It's two stop race. I think, you know, you split it. If you split the race evenly into three stints, two stops, then you're looking at about 28 laps per stint with, I think, 129 lapper. It sounds like you can do about 30 laps on a tank of fuel running full rich. We saw Dixon do 34, two stints of 34 laps to make it to the end. I think Kirkwood may have done 35, but that's in heavy fuel save. And then as far as the tires go, wasn't really sure how the green tire was going to hold up. I mean, it was definitely faster at the beginning of the stint, no doubt about that. It sounded like there are some questions of its durability over the course of a race stint, but you know, Dixon picked it for the end. A couple other guys ran on it twice, so it seemed like it turned out to be a pretty good race tire. It didn't fall off too much.
Which didn't surprise me, because for one thing, it was, you know, I guess during the race, the sun did come out, it was pretty bright, but it wasn't that hot. There was a new aero screen that was, I think, something like 11 pounds lighter. And I don't know if we, I think we talked about before how in preparation for the hybrid system, there were some other components in the car that were made lighter. And also they made the tire compounds a little bit harder just to, for that extra weight that they were anticipating. So anyway, the combination of a little bit harder tire and even a lighter car this time around than St. Pete. I wasn't surprised that the green tires were going to be the favored tire. I was a little surprised that more people didn't start on them. So, I mean, we should talk about the starting lineup a little bit. It's pretty interesting. And congratulations to Rosenquist to make it on the pole. He had saved a set of green tires. I noticed in, I think it was the Fast 12, maybe it was the opening round. He didn't even have to use a set of green tires where everybody else did to put their flyer in. So, you know, anyway, he'd done an amazing job getting on the pole. I don't know if there's anything else in the starting lineup you want to mention.
No, just that everybody, it seemed like the primary was the choice for most of the field. At the front, you had Power starting on the alternates in second. Then you have to go all the way back to 10th for Kirkwood, who started on the alternate. Rossi in 13th, VK in 18th, Fittipaldi 19th, Harvey 23rd, Stingray Rob 25th. Those were the guys that started on the green tire. Everybody else elected to start on the black.
So one more thing from qualifications and about the grid. You know, the McLarens were nowhere. Rossi was 13th, Award 14th. That was the only other thing I wanted to talk about in the grid. I mean, Rossi was the furthest McLaren up in 13th.
Yeah, that was a little surprising. Award, I think, just said in his interview afterwards he just didn't have the pace. He was surprised that they couldn't go any faster in qualifying trim. But yeah, good call out there. So interesting start. Actually, great start to this race. As we know at Long Beach, it's because, you know, these guys stand on the gas. They come through that tight hairpin and then stand on the gas only 100, 200 yards after coming out of there. They really, I mean, you can barely get the grid formed up in that amount of time. Usually we only get like two, maybe three rows together before they wave the green flag. So race control, I guess this was actually a decision that the drivers came up with, but race control decided to leave the pace car out all the way through the final corner and then have it come in at the normal pit entry rather than pulling off at the little back entrance like it has in the past to try to give the field a chance to bunch up a little bit more. Turns out, I feel like we only really got one more row together before everybody just took off, but you know, worth a try. Still, we still got a nice, clean, fast start. And Power wasted no time. He took the lead into the very first corner. Really crafty. I mean, he it looked like Rosenqvist got a great jump on him. He tucks in early on the straightaway and then just outbrakes Rosenqvist into turn one and sails it around the outside and is off with the lead with the green tires and in great shape.
Yeah, that was a great move. And being on the green tires, it's nice. You know, he didn't want to, I'm sure the plan all along was to get the lead ASAP and stretch it out, but, you know, got it going into turn one and was just pretty much gone behind, you know, like you said, only the front, I don't know, four or five rows formed up. So those cars were all in a big cluster. It looked to me like Dixon down on the inside kind of squeezed, went back up to the right and might have made light contact with Lundgaard, but everybody got through clean. There wasn't much of a shift in the running order going through those first couple turns other than right at the lead. But, and then everybody behind was just single file. You know, you come out of that hairpin kind of all by yourself. And so, you know, I think the way to solve that, if they really care that much about getting all the rows formed up before they throw the green, is just move the start line for the opening part of the race, just down the track a couple hundred more yards, if they really care that much about it, you know. But anyway, generally a clean start. And although first time through the fountain section, Award was a little bit late on the brakes, I guess maybe underestimated how much, you know, the stack up was going to affect and went flying right into to his teammate Rossi. And I think he took a little bit of wing damage, and he definitely, Rossi ended up with a puncture on the left rear. So that was, you know, made the tough McLaren start even that much tougher.
Yeah. On the replay on TV, we saw a little piece go flying. So I think Award did take wing damage, but he stayed out and continued that stint. Like you said, Rossi got his tire cut, so he had to come in. They wound up hitting Award with a drive through. So that didn't help. And then Blomqvist hit the back of Award in the jam up as well. I don't know if he got damage from that or not, but yeah, a little incident there. I mean, like you said, tough start for McLaren. They didn't qualify well. And then the two team cars running into each other and both having to come in, one for damage, one for a drive through, or one for a flat tire, one for a drive through, is a tough way to start the race.
Yeah. I don't know how I feel about that penalty. I mean, there was definitely contact. There's no doubt about it. And it's up to the guy behind to avoid contact, but it happens at other points in the race. And as we'll talk about, it happens later in a critical part of the race, almost the exact same thing. Yep. It goes unpenalized. So, I don't know. I don't know that they needed to throw that penalty. I mean, either way. Well,
I was going to say, if we want to address it now, I think the main difference is that Rossi had to come in with a flat tire. Newgarden didn't have to pit. He stalled and rolled for a couple seconds before getting in gear, but he didn't actually have to come through the pits. So maybe that was the deciding factor for race control. I don't know, but
could be.
We can get to that later.
Yeah, Rossi didn't lose any spots though in the altercation where Newgarden lost second, which was pretty big. So I don't know. Yeah. But yeah, in general, those laps are clean, and there was some passing going on at the beginning. It was mostly guys on green tires making ground. I mean, in the first couple laps, Kirkwood made a spot on Armstrong, and then he also got Lundgaard a little bit later. VK went from 18th to 13th in the first 10 laps, and mostly off camera, I saw a little bit. But
yeah, there was tons of passing in those opening five laps. The TV cameras were all over it, and Rosenqvist, I was really hoping to see some race pace out of that team. I think they still have to get it together, obviously, but he faded early. I mean, he, after just a few laps, I think he finally leveled out all the way back in P6 from starting on the pole.
Yeah, I picked up on the TV coverage when I was reviewing that they were having some sort of a brake heating, some wheel heating. I don't know if it was a brake thing, but they might have picked up some debris or something because everything in the front wasn't right. So I don't know, once they changed tires, it might have cured it because, you know, sort of the slide stopped at that point. But that was too bad. I would have liked to see him, you know, compete for the win. So as we settle in, though, I mean, power is just gone, right? I mean, he opens up. I think he's up to about, I don't know, I think it was about an 8-second lead or so. And I noticed on TV again reviewing, he didn't touch his push to pass. So he was in really good shape, you know, and the tires were holding up well. The yellow coming out on lap 15 when it did, it was just a tough call for power and the team to make.
Well, I think it was a terrible call, to be honest. And I had that in my live race notes too, that it was a terrible, I thought the moment they pulled him in, it was a terrible call. They told him on the radio, I think that the engineers said they didn't think they could make it either way, which I interpret as they couldn't make it on fuel coming in, but if they stayed out, they wouldn't have been able to make the tire last that long or something. I didn't really understand what that call meant, but it's interesting because, like we said at the top of the podcast, this is the call. Bringing Dixon in is what puts him in position to win the race. It doesn't win the race for him, but it's what puts him in the position to be able to win the race. Whereas power, I think it took him out of position to win the race. The difference being power, like you said, had about an 8-second lead at that point. He had clean air. He had tons of pace. And in a track where track position is everything, he had the ultimate track position. You know, he was out in the lead, whereas Dixon was seventh in line in that place. And so by bringing him in, they essentially moved him from seventh in line with everybody else to second in line on an alternate strategy. So what was an amazing call for Dixon, I think, was a terrible call for Power. And it's just tough because in Power's career, I mean, I feel like we've seen so many times where it used to happen a lot in like the early 2010s. He would qualify on the pole, stretch out a lead, and then a yellow would come out and they'd bring him in. You know, he'd just kind of be mired mid-pack and never really be able to recover and get back to the win. So I think that was a terrible call. I think he would have won the race. I think he was a little faster than Newgarden. Newgarden had a chance to pass Dixon at the end for the win. I think he probably would have won had they left him out. I mean, hindsight's 20/20, but
yeah, there's no way to know. There's no way to know how long those green tires would have held up for him. And, you know, he'd already had 15 laps on him when the yellow came out, but man, he was just gone. Looked like he was untouchable. And I agree that it was a different situation to call Dixon in. I mean, Power, they called him in from the lead, but by the nature of the yellow, that entire 8-second lead or whatever it was evaporated to zero. Right. So the field caught right up to him. So it wasn't like he gave up that gap. He did give up the track position, though. You're right about that. And, you know, being there live, I wasn't real clear exactly on the lap numbers, and I was looking at my app and I didn't really have a TV screen right in front of me to look at. So I had no idea. I didn't know if they were going to be able to make it to the end or not. It took me a while to realize that they were just going to try to make it on one more. I just wasn't sure what was going to happen.
Yeah, we weren't sure watching on TV earlier. I mean, I think you kind of have to assume that they are going to try to make it on one stop, because why would you give up the lead, you know, mire yourself back in 12th or 13th, wherever he came out, and still have to make two stops with everybody else? So, but it wasn't clear. It wasn't clear that they were actually going to be able to stretch it that far.
The other thing is, coming in from the lead, you don't know who's going to follow you in and who's not, right? So he came in from the lead hoping that everybody was going to come in behind him. Nobody did, right? Except Dixon, who had been seventh. Eventually, you know, he finally followed him in, and Dixon was probably happy to see all those guys in front of him stay out. But Power didn't know. There's no way to know who's coming in behind you. So, yeah, it was a critical decision, and I think they made the wrong one, and you pegged it right away. The way the race played out differently for Dixon and Power from that point on, though, was pretty remarkable, right? How different their races went, even though they both stopped on the same lap.
Yeah, definitely.
So hard to know. But anyway, let's talk about the yellow. I mean, Rasmussen had brushed the wall a couple laps earlier in the lap, I guess, coming out of the hairpin. And so had left rear damage, I guess.
Yep. It just broke mid-corner in turn four, it looks like. And he spun down to the inside wall and pinched Jack Harvey, nowhere to go, pinched him down into the wall as well and cut up his side pod. But yeah, it looked like a pretty nasty incident. I don't know that the hit was that hard, but there was debris all over the place and everything. And of course, you know, we always like to see these things run green, but when you have a car stranded there, I don't think there is anything race control could do. So I think just calling the yellow right away was the right call.
Yeah, that was a no-brainer.
So I call this, I kind of refer to this as the Dixon power strategy is strategy B. So power comes in from the lead, obviously, Dixon seventh. And then you have Lundgaard, Kirkwood, McLaughlin. Those guys were all running, I guess, just outside of the... McLaughlin was 11th before the yellow, so he was just outside of the top 10. But they all came in. Armstrong was 10th, so he came in from the top 10. And then you have Rahal, Lundqvist, Fittipaldi, Canepino, Ferrucci, O'Ward, Simpson, Blomqvist, and Harvey all come in under this yellow as well.
Yeah, Harvey didn't have a choice, really. He was had a bunch of side pod stuff hanging off, so he was forced into that. That's the so at the restart, those guys were all the back half of the field, and we restart on lap 20. If you cut the remaining laps in half for the strategy B guys, then they stopped on 17. They need to each get 34 laps.
Yeah, so I just did, I think, in my phone calculator, like 85 minus 20, and then they restarted on that. So that's 32 and a half laps. And then if you add, we're on lap 20 at that point, they're aiming for about lap 52, 51, something like that. So that's what I had in my head and in my notes while I was watching this.
Okay. So yeah, all the stopper guys have to get to lap 51 to really make this thing work. So at the restart, Newgarden's in the lead. You got Ericsson in second, Herta in third, Pelot in fourth. Rosenqvist was in fifth at the restart.
Yep. Yep, that's right. And then VK is now sixth. Grosjean is all the way up to seventh, courtesy of staying out. He had a good start, but I think staying out helped him jump way up there. And then Pucher, I don't know exactly how you pronounce his name, but Theo Pucher in Malukas's car. First of all, really cool to have him in this race, the reigning F2 champion. I just went back and looked up a bunch of his results, and the guy is freakishly talented. He's raced against some massive talent in Europe. It's cool to have him over in IndyCar for a race. But anyways, so he's jumped all the way up to eighth by staying out. And then you've got Stingray Rob restarting in ninth, Nolan Siegel 10th, and then Rossi, who had to come in for the tire. He's the cut tire on lap 3. He stays out, so he's now restarting in 11th. So from the very back all the way up to 11th with two stops to make. And those are all the guys that are still on strategy A, we'll call it, the main two-stop strategy. Everyone else behind is on strategy B, which we aren't totally sure at the time, but we think they're going to try to stretch it on one stop.
Yeah, so just a note on VK here. He looked really good at this point in the race. He's still on his green tire, so he started on green. He's the only guy that stayed out. Well, Stingray did a little further back and stayed on the greens. And he is, he's up to sixth at this point with a little help from the pit strategy, but he had started 18th and he's all over Rosenqvist, who is the pole sitter. So at this point, I was expecting VK to have a really good race. And then also you mentioned Grosjean was up there. So anyway, all right. So basically now we're just in the run for, you know, the guys who haven't stopped yet are obviously, they got to get to, well,
technically, they could have come in around lap 25 if you assume they can do 30 laps on fuel without any fuel save. But they've had the yellow to save some laps and everything, and tires probably aren't totally going off yet. So they wind up coming in around lap 30. We've got Group B aiming for lap 51. Critically, though, I think like 3 or 4 laps after the restart, Dixon on the green tire gets power for what is the lead of Strategy B, and I mean, kind of just drives away. I mean, that is where Dixon and Power sort of diverge, you know, for the rest of this race, being on the same strategy, but finishing quite apart from each other.
All right. So out of the strategy A guys, VK comes in on the green tires. He's the first guy to stop. And he comes in on lap 28. A couple laps later, Newgarden comes in from the lead, followed by Ericsson. Herta stays out. Pelot stays out. Next time by, Pelot comes in. And then as he comes out back onto the track, he had overcut Ericsson. And he came out ahead of Ericsson, but Ericsson already had a lap on his tires. And those guys battled really hard through like turns or I guess 5, 6, 7, 8, and really, you know, side by side, kind of slowed each other down. So then when Herta stops a lap later and comes out, he's got a pretty nice gap on those guys and is able to, you know, move into second. Well, it's not second.
So yeah, Herta pulls off the big overcut, stays out a lap longer than Pillow, I believe, and overcuts up to second in line in strategy A. But yeah, like you said, actually the TV cameras were all over that battle between Pillow and Ericsson when Pillow came out of the pits. And it looked for a second, it looked like Ericsson was going to try to go around the outside of Pillow in turn 8. And I thought for a second we were going to get a repeat of Dixon and O Ward last year. But Ericsson backed off. The camera was pointed to the right, so we didn't really get to see just how close Ericsson was to hitting the wall. But I think it was really close. I mean, I would imagine he got a little crossed up and almost hit the wall there. But hangs on, doesn't get the position from Pillow, but doesn't throw his race away either.
There was some really cool viewing back on that part of the track, but you just, you know, our seats were basically right across from the start finish line where there was no passing. So I kind of missed a lot of this wheel to wheel stuff and didn't have a great TV angle either. So I missed a lot of that, but that was pretty cool watching that on TV. It was a pretty big moment in the race actually. But yeah, it gets Herta up to right behind Newgarden. At this point though, Newgarden's, you know, he really starts to stretch it out from those guys. He moves up over the next few laps and he's 4+ seconds of Herta, away from Herta at this point. And so on strategy A, he kind of looks like he's all by himself, right? Like he's got the advantage on strategy A, even at this mid part of the race. And they're all on green tires at this point.
Yeah. So for strategy A, first round of stops is done on lap 34. And now we're just kind of watching to see if Power and Dixon and those other guys on strategy B can get all the way to lap to around lap 51. That would be, I think, where they split the race evenly. So we know they're in heavy fuel save. They actually come back from commercial on lap 36, and you can just hear Power in heavy fuel save trying to get the car home. And what we're also watching is the lap times between how slow these guys are going to save fuel and how fast Newgarden's going, because he's basically a pit stop behind. So he's got to race all the way around and catch up and pass these guys on track. So on lap 40, Hinchcliffe said on TV that he thought it was untenable that they were going to be able to hold on to the lead with heavy fuel save. But I was watching timing and scoring really closely, and there were some laps there where Dixon and Power both were going as fast, if not faster, than Newgarden at times. And I think that's because even though Newgarden didn't have to save, he had a lot of traffic to get through. He had a lot of cars to pass on track, and it slowed him up a little bit. And they even put on lap 42, they put the last lap time graphic up on TV, which was awesome. Great coverage by NBC to do that. And the lap times were basically even. So Hinchcliffe is saying on TV that he doesn't think that strategy B is going to work. But I'm like, I don't know, man. I think, you know, the difference in lap time isn't as big as you would expect at this point.
No, but Dixon is pulling away from Power significantly, right? So you know Power's in major fuel save mode, and they showed it on TV. And so you figured Dixon's really in kind of the same boat, and that maybe they're just banking on a yellow or something.
But I will say also, the other thing that Newgarden had in hand was once those guys ahead of him did come in, you know, even if he couldn't get around them on track, he was going to have clean air for 7 or 8 laps before he had to make his second stop. So, and you know that he's just going to rip when he gets clean air and start making up a ton of time. So even though, you know, he wasn't necessarily taking big chunks out of Dixon's lead, then he was going to have an opportunity in a few laps or so once those guys on strategy B started coming in. Just had two guys bail out of strategy B. Ferrucci and Canepino both pitted on the same lap, which was lap 44. And so we know that those guys aren't going to be able to make it to the end from there. So there's still about 7 laps before the target. So you don't know if anybody else is going to, you know, if other guys are going to start bailing out. But most of the guys on strategy B were committed to making it to the end. All right. So, yeah. So we get to lap 49 then. Lundgaard comes in and you think that that's close enough that he can probably make it, although it's going to be a real stretch. Lap 50, Rahal comes in. He has a slow stop with a fueling issue, so his race kind of falls apart a little bit. But then it's not until lap 51, which is what we sort of had circled as the target lap, that Dixon and Power come in. So that's a good sign for them that they're going to be able to make it. I didn't have the gap between Dixon and Power written down. You know, I kind of just think it was pretty obvious that Power wasn't going to be able to run down Dixon. I mean, Dixon's the master of this kind of thing. But the gap to Dixon and Newgarden at this point is 17.7 seconds right before Dixon comes in. So that's a real gap. They both have one stop left to make, and that means that Newgarden has about 18 seconds to close down on track. And I guess you could do it with a slightly faster pit stop too, but almost all of it's going to have to be done on track. Yeah, so that's basically Kirkwood goes one lap further than anybody else on strategy B, gets to lap 52, but that's it. And then there's just a window of about, let's see, one, two, three, I guess just four or five laps between when those guys in heavy fuel save stop and then when everybody else who's still on strategy A comes in for their final stop. So for those four or five laps, Newgarden's laying down qualifying laps, obviously trying to make up as much time as he can while he's got clean air. But lap 57, VK is the first to come in from strategy A. And then just a lap later, I believe, let me double check the lap share to make sure. Yeah. Just one lap later, lap 58 is when Newgarden comes in from the lead and decides to go to the green tire. And he actually clears Power at pit exit and just has 8 seconds to Dixon with, what is that, about 26, 27 laps to close that gap. So he looks like he's in really good shape.
I remember at the race being shocked that Newgarden had come out of the pits ahead of Power. And then next time by, I kind of counted it down and saw that the gap had really shrunk to Dixon. And I thought right then, this is over. There's no way that Dixon's going to hold on. Not only just lose the spot to Newgarden, but maybe to the other guys on strategy A. And then over the next few laps, I mean, Newgarden really cut into the lead rapidly. So it went from 8 seconds down to four, down to three, down to two. And it was just like, wow, it's Newgarden's race. I thought it was over.
No, same. I thought exactly the same thing watching on TV. I have in my race notes with 18 to go that I wrote down, we know Dixon isn't going to last, meaning he's not going to be able to hold on to the lead. 18 laps is a long time, and Newgarden was coming fast. I have Newgarden catching Dixon with about 16 to go. And just like you, I thought that was it. I thought he was going to blow by, and then, you know, the last 15 laps were going to be how far down the order does Dixon fall? Turns out we get an incredibly dramatic finish. I mean, I didn't expect that at all.
No.
And I'm curious what it was like, what the atmosphere in the grandstands was like watching that all unfold.
Well, I had moved down to the fence because our grandstand seat, I couldn't really see the exit of the hairpin. There were some trees in the way and a bridge. And so I went down to the fencing and I could see straight down to the exit of the hairpin. And that's kind of when I lost. I actually did that earlier in the race, and that's kind of when I lost view of the TV screens. But so there was basically one guy on one side of me in the fence and another guy on the other.
Yeah.
So we were just like, you know, and these guys knew what was going on. They were both pretty sharp about the race. And I don't remember exactly what their opinion was, but I was like, wow, this is over. I mean, Newgarden's going to have this one in the bag. With my notes say, with just less than 20 to go, the gap to the lead closing rapidly, and Newgarden has a 6-second lead over Herta, which, you know, that's a long way of when you're sitting there watching the race. There's a lot of track in between those two guys, so I didn't think that Herta was going to be able to close on Newgarden. Power had just gotten passed by both Pillow and Erickson, so it sure looked like strategy B was going to be a loser because Power was fading fast. And then, like you said, with 15 to go, Newgarden is right on Dixon's tail with 15 to go. So it's like, wow, okay, he's got all day to make this pass happen.
Yep.
Herta's closing in, and he's within 5 seconds of the lead now with no cars in between. So all of a sudden, he's entering the picture. It's like, well, you never know. Herta, you know, maybe he's got a shot to win the thing. And then Pillow is within a second of Herta. So the whole complexion of the race was changing right now, and basically Power's out of it.
That was really interesting. We, got the exact same picture on TV. I think after Newgarden had been held up for 4 or 5 laps, unable to get around, and then you could visibly see Herta and Pelot started to close in, then we kind of got the feeling that, all right, this actually might not just be a cakewalk for Newgarden. I don't know if there was any way to pick up on this at the track, but amazingly, Dixon was able to use push to pass in those final laps to keep Newgarden behind. So he'd saved enough fuel to be able to turn his turbo up for a little bit on the straightaways and use it to defend.
Yeah, I was listening to Dixon's radio a lot and I was getting some interference, but basically the gist of it was that, you know, they were making the number. They kept talking about the number and they weren't talking much. But at times I heard him say, yeah, you can go ahead and use some push to pass. So, you know, he was getting great exit speed out of the corners that mattered leading onto the straightaways, like out of the hairpin and out of turn 8 stuff. He was really, I think he was just leaning on the push to pass then and just gliding it into the turns to make up and save. Because, you know, when I went back and watched it on TV and, you know, Newgarden would be right on him going through the fountain, but then sort out a touch by the time they got to turn 9, and same as, you know, by the time they got to turn 1. So I also read that Dixon felt like his car was a little more trimmed out, so he wasn't carrying as much downforce, therefore not as much drag. That may have helped, definitely helped his speed at the end of the straightaway, but yeah, also may have helped him conserve fuel. Yeah, I still thought it was just a matter of time. You know, but I guess, I was going to say, I guess, you know, Newgarden, they were both on green tires. Newgarden obviously in dirty air once he got up behind Dixon, maybe abused his tires a little more and didn't have any tire left at the end when he really needed it. Not really sure. But so we get to 10 to go and things haven't changed much. You know, you've got Newgarden still right there, but you also, now you have Herta who's entered the picture and is very close. And, you know, they're closing in on this pack of cars, a 4-person pack. That's actually a pretty interesting little pack fighting hard. It was, Kiffin Simpson, Stingray, Siegel, and Ferrucci. And they're in a battle for 19th through 22nd. I mean, they don't want to just pull over and lose their spots. You know, it might not sound like much to be battling that far back, but hey man, they care about every position. So, we knew it was going to get interesting. And that's kind of when Herta, you know, the drama happened down at the hairpin there where he knocked into Newgarden.
Yeah, that was wild. So I was on board. TV was on. They had just gone to commercial break or something. So, and I was just like, you know, I was watching on Peacock and I was seething that they were under commercial. I was like, I got to see what's going on, you know? So I tuned into Newgarden's onboard. And so I heard him go into anti-stall in the hairpin from his onboard. And I like shouted at my phone. I was like, oh my God. You know, I didn't realize that Herta had hit him initially. I just thought something happened. Like he overslowed the corner and it was like a technical glitch or something. But anyways, that was totally dramatic. He goes into anti-stall for a second and Herta gets by him. And so that's huge for Scott Dixon because it sets Newgarden back and it helps him build up a little bit more of a gap from all three of those guys behind him, Herta, Newgarden, and Pelot. And yeah, I mean, that was an incredibly dramatic moment. And then obviously sort of controversial whether or not Herta deserved a penalty for that one. But again, another moment that just completely changed the complexion of the race. If that hadn't happened, you know, Newgarden still had 9 laps to try to get around Dixon, which is a lot of time.
Yeah, I could see that from my spot and I couldn't tell what happened. Obviously, you know, the contact happened maybe right at the apex and I just saw the track out of the hairpin, but I saw Newgarden slow and I saw the gap build to Dixon and I'm telling the guys next to me and they're looking at me like, what are you talking about? But I'm like, no, you know, whatever. But not sure what had happened, but I did see that Dixon, you know, had opened this big gap and that Newgarden was now in fourth.
Another interesting thing is, well, Erickson starts to catch the pack a little bit too. So these guys are really held up. But then Simpson is the next car to be lapped, who's Dixon's team car. So he pulls over for Dixon and then slots right back in between Dixon and Herta. And I thought that was pretty interesting. I wasn't sure, you know he's going to try to hold Herta up. Obviously, he's not going to do anything dramatic, but that's his teammate who he's trying to help, aid to the win. So that was a pretty interesting moment. I think that happened with about 6 laps to go. But by 3 laps to go, they've cleared the traffic and it's a straight up fight between Dixon and Herta.
Yeah, and Herta gets right on his gearbox again on the going through places like the fountain or through the hairpin, but just, you know, loses the gap on those straightaways. So whatever Dixon was doing was pretty masterful at the wheel to just, you know, get his exit speed when he needed it. Herta, as close as he was through the slow sections, never even had a chance to try to make a pass.
Yeah.
Yeah, those last few laps flew by, man. All of a sudden, I look up and the guy's waving the white flag. I couldn't believe it that Dixon was still in the lead and that he'd actually looked like he was going to be able to maintain it. And sure enough, you know, holds on and gets the win.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. I mean, it just seems like time and time again, when you think one of these races is over, they just, I mean, you just let them run green, no interference from race control at all. And they just still unbelievably come down to these dramatic finishes time and time again. So yeah, this was an awesome race and unbelievable win for Dixon. I mean, the fuel save is a huge part of it, but I think also, like you said, whatever he was doing to just launch off the corners where it mattered too, whatever little adjustments he made. I mean, I think you nailed it. It was probably just coasting into those corners and setting up a late apex so he could just straight line right off and open up the gap. Yeah, I mean, it's amazing driving. Absolutely amazing.
You know, he's not the only one who tried the strategy. He did it way better than everybody else. I will say that the Honda was, you know, sure looked to be way better on fuel mileage than the Chevys. No doubt about that. But, you know, he had some teammates that did it too, went to that same strategy, and other guys on the Hondas, and they couldn't do what he did.
Yeah. So Herta comes home P2, though. Another amazing race for him. Super close to getting the win. And Pillow as well, all around strong race. I think it was cool that both those guys were able to make the overcut work on their pit stops. And both had pretty similar races.
Yeah, Pillow was right there. You know, had he not got into that wheel-to-wheel thing with Erickson at pit out, maybe he could have been ahead of Herta at that point. We'll never know. But Herta had enough pace that Pillow was never really able to make a move on him, even though they were very close together. Yeah, great race for Pillow, top three. Newgarden finishes fourth, probably a little frustrated, you know, especially since I sure thought he had the race won for the whole middle portion of that race, pretty much. I thought he had it in the bag. And then to get punted and, you know, lose a couple spots at the end is pretty frustrating. But still, a strong race.
Yep. And then Erickson, I think, had a great race. He winds up fifth right there with his teammates. But there were a couple times in this race where he looked like the strongest Andretti, the strongest team car. And it's only his second race with that team. So I think that's really encouraging for him.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, so Will Power, just, you know, kind of a tough circumstance for him, because I thought his early race strategy, you know, I think he was a little bit lucky. I don't think you disclosed to everybody else what tire you're starting on. You submit it after warm up, and so you don't know what everybody else was going with. So him being the only guy on greens all the way back to Kirkwood, he was probably psyched about that. He totally made it work, you know, opened that huge lead at the start. And like you said, if we don't go yellow right there, I think he's got a great chance to be the winner. But that hangs in there, you know, obviously has to save a lot more fuel than, or at least try to save more fuel than Dixon does, and was probably extremely frustrated, but kept it all intact and brings it home in sixth.
Yeah, I just can't help but think they totally shot themselves in the foot by pitting, giving up what was otherwise a straightforward two-stop race, and, you know, pitting from the lead. But yeah, like you said, hangs in there. I mean, we hear all the time how frustrating it is to run a fuel save race like that, because, you know, you just want to let the car rip and you have to go slow and hit a number. And he was doing that from lap 20 onwards. So 65 laps of that is having given up the lead, but hangs in there, brings it home. Kirkwood, very similar deal. He didn't pit from the lead, obviously, but he comes home right behind Power in seventh on the same strategy. I think they wound up pretty close together on track too. It looks like there is about just a half a second or 0.4 between them when they cross the line.
Yeah, Power, I think, only used one set of greens on his first stint. Kirkwood came in off the greens, you know, on that to shift the strategy B, but put another set of used greens on. And so he was looking good mid-race. But at the end, those guys on black tires, they just, And they just didn't really have it. In fact, Grosjean, who finishes in eighth, was on greens at the end, and he made up a lot of time and caught that little pack that was, it was Power, Kirkwood, and Rosenquist that were kind of nose to tail on black tires. Grosjean caught that pack, ended up passing Rosenquist with just a couple to go on his green tires. So yeah, strong race for Grosjean, stuck to plan A, moves up eight spots.
Yeah, and for Rosenquist, getting the pole is awesome. He had, I think he was fourth in both practice sessions. He had a really strong weekend. I think finishing ninth, having started on the pole and fading so hard early is pretty frustrating. But that's, I mean, this race and St. Pete's about as well as we've ever seen those Meyer Shank cars run in a couple years. I feel like it was back in 2019 or 2020 that Jack Harvey had some good runs with them. And then obviously Castroneves got the win, but he seems to be pulling them out of a slump a little bit. So I think still a good weekend. I think if they figure out the race pace, whatever was slowing them down on the opening stint, then they could still have a really good season ahead of them.
Yeah, I agree. Rossi up to 10th. Really good recovery, right? After having to stop for that punctured left rear. Yeah, he started 13th. He was the furthest up. McLaren ends up 10th. Not terrible, all things considered.
Yeah, and then Theo Pecher, 11th. He has a great race. That's 11 spots up from where he started. It's really interesting. I watched, they were on board with him during free practice one, and it was kind of cool to just watch him feel his way around the track and slowly, you know, push the car deeper and deeper into the brake zone before getting off the gas. It's kind of fun to watch a driver, you know, feel their way around a track like that early in the weekend, get familiar with the car. But by the time they got to the race, I mean, he started all the way back in 22nd, but he was totally ready to go. He passed Rasmussen and Canepino both on track in the opening laps and then stuck to the two-stop strategy, which vaulted him from what was 18th all the way up to 8th, was also pretty quick by the end. I think he got Lundqvist and Armstrong on track, who were both in fuel save, to wind up in 11th. So it's a good race, really good race from him.
Yeah, and I saw today that he's going to be in the car next weekend at Bama. So obviously he impressed the bosses at McLaren and it's given himself another shake. He's going to have to learn that track from scratch too. But, you know, not being surrounded by concrete, also already having a bunch of laps under his belt in race trim, he should be way better off. So that'll be really cool to see. Armstrong in 12th. You know, he went in when Dixon and Power did and opted for strategy B. Didn't really, he looked strong early in the race. I don't know if he ended up getting in major fuel save mode or whatever, but obviously it didn't work out for him like it did for his teammate.
Yep. And Lundqvist Lundqvist finished behind him, also went to strategy B. He was 15th before the yellow came out and winds up 13th. So it kind of worked in that regard. It's hard to say, but yeah, Lundqvist brings it home 13th. It's not a bad finish.
Yeah, VK 14th. You know, he had huge opening laps, made a bunch of spots starting on greens, stayed out, kept the greens under him, and looked really strong at the end of that first stint. I don't know what happened from there. Maybe the black tires just didn't work for him because he just seemed to lose pace and kind of faded and never really challenged anybody from there, at least not that I saw. You know, in that first stint, toward the end of that stint, he was right on Rosenquist gearbox and ahead of Grosjean. And those guys finished way up the road from him. So I don't know what happened there. I didn't detect any major problems. It might have just been pace on the black tires. He just didn't have it. But, you know, he was exciting at the beginning of the race, that's for sure. Canepino in 15th.
Yep. He went to strategy B, but then abandoned the fuel save strategy and came in on lap 43. So didn't really make sense to me at the time going to coming in under yellow. I mean, I guess coming in under yellow, he probably, I don't know where he was before that, how much track position he gave up. But, you know, he essentially did a three-stop race when two stops was king. But at the same time, when the team decided to pull him in and abandon strategy B, he was, I don't know what the gap was, but he was running behind Lundqvist at the time. And he wound up finishing only one spot behind Lundqvist anyways. So probably kind of a wash there. But yeah, he definitely had an interesting race. I think he showed a lot of pace this weekend. I actually had him in my fantasy team. And went to strategy B and then was one of a couple guys that abandoned it. And I think he wound up probably about where he would have if he had stayed on fuel save.
So award 16th. I mean, kind of a wasted weekend for those guys. He got the contact penalty, you know, started 14th. So obviously we mentioned, you know, they had some qualifying issues, took a penalty right off the bat, also abandoned the fuel save strategy. I think the guys in the Chevy maybe just saw that it was just, you know, a lot of the guys in the Chevys, it just wasn't going to work. So I feel like those are the guys that abandoned it. But yeah, ends up 16th. I mean, just nowhere to be found.
Yeah, Ray Hall all the way back in 17th. I don't know exactly where he would have wound up. He had that pit issue on the second stop, which slowed him down a little bit. But yeah, I mean, it's frustrating for him, I'm sure.
Stingray Robin, 18th. You know, at the end of the race, when the leaders were coming up on that pack of four, he was in that pack, ended up getting around Kiffin Simpson and just drove away from that pack, and the leaders never caught him. So he ended up staying on the lead lap and put, at least at the last 10 laps of the race, a lot of strong laps together. So that's a good way to end the weekend. And, you know, probably feels pretty good about that going into Alabama.
Yeah, I had exactly the same thing. If you haven't listened to our interview with him from last week, definitely go back and listen. It's a great interview. He's really sharp guy. Awesome to talk to. And it was cool to see him have a strong finish like that. Like you said, he was right in the thick of that pack that the leaders came up on. And he just flat out drove away from everybody else in it. And when everybody else in the pack got lapped, he was a ways out in front of Dixon. I mean, he never really even threatened to go a lap down. So that was pretty cool to see. That brings us to Simpson. It was the first car lap down, went to strategy B. He was 24th before the yellow, so finishes 19th. So it actually kind of works in that sense. But I just have in my notes, you know, he spent, by going to strategy B, he spent about two thirds of this race in heavy fuel save, which I think is probably really good experience for a rookie, because I don't think these guys ever really, you know, in the IndyCar ladder system, you're never tasked with saving fuel. The races are just pretty, they're straightforward. So yeah, so I think that's a positive.
Yeah, Nolan Siegel ends up 20th, up seven, started 27th, stuck to plan A, but I don't have much on him. Good experience for him. It's really his first IndyCar race, right? Because he ran at Thermal, but it was a non-points kind of an exhibition race. So this is really his first race. And so, you know, good experience for him.
Yep. Ferrucci went to strategy B, and then I think they abandoned the fuel save. He was 22nd, so sort of a wash. We did an interview with him as well, which was a great interview. But I think he was expecting top 10 pace ahead of the weekend based on how they were in St. Pete. And I think the weekend just kind of unraveled for them. They barely got on track for second practice. I forget exactly what the issue was that kept him off track, but he only got six laps in that session. And I think he only got about 15 or 16 in practice one, which is on the far lower end, you know, when everybody else was able to do 20 upwards of, you know, 20 to 30 laps, he only got 15, it looks like. So tough weekend overall.
Yeah. Blomqvist, you know, not sure what to say there. He was on the B strategy and, you know, being the teammate to Rosenqvist, who's on the pole. I guess that's a direct comparison you can make as far as pace and stuff like that. Although Blomqvist doesn't have much experience, right? Still, but I'd say maybe a little disappointing to finish up back in 22nd, and not just the finishing position, but just, you know, faded throughout the race and really just didn't look to have the pace.
Yep. Lundgaard is 23rd. He looked really fast at the beginning of this race, and he looked really fast for most of the weekend, but the race itself just totally unraveled. He went to strategy B from 9th and then wound up abandoning strategy B, and also had to yield five spots on track for an unsafe release from what was 3rd in line in strategy B. And I assume just getting stuck back in traffic is what cost him, or maybe it was making the extra stop. I don't know. I actually kind of lost track, but somehow he went from looking like a top six contender to finishing all the way back in 23rd.
Yeah, live, I had no idea what was going on. I didn't realize he'd been penalized. I was just like, wow, he's gone. So no idea. I mean, it was an unsafe release. The pit lane's narrow there and it's curving. I think they had to assess something there. Kind of odd to wait for after the restart I don't know how many laps went by, and then he had to sort of go slow down and just point five guys by. That was kind of an odd way to assess it, but yeah. And then something else from there, I don't know, it continued to go wrong from there. So don't know. Yeah. Fittipaldi in 24th. I don't know. Didn't seem, I just, you know, almost didn't notice him much during the race. Was sort of stuck toward the back all day. Harvey in 25th, you know, we talked about him being involved with Rasmussen in that yellow flag incident. Had some damage. I don't know if that affected the handling of his car. Probably. So ends up 25th. And McLaughlin, I don't know what happened there. Some sort of an issue that kept him in the pits.
Yeah, he had a mechanical that brought him in on lap 71. Don't know exactly what it was, but they have him scored 14 laps down. I don't know if he ever got back out after that. Probably not. But he was 10th at the time. And so, yeah, just, I guess it was just some sort of mechanical.
Yeah. And then Rasmussen, you know, he got the DNF and, but he was pretty impressive at times over the weekend. In free practice one, he was 9th fastest. You know, it's only his second race. He ends up dead last, but I think there were some highlight moments of the weekend for him. So
yeah, that rounds it out. That's Long Beach. And we've got a lot of IndyCar coming up. We've got Barber just a week away. And then we come to Indy for the month of May. And then after that, it's a busy summer for IndyCar. So we're back in the swing of the season here.
All right, so let's cover some of this news about the penalty. I just saw a couple hours ago that IndyCar disqualified Newgarden completely from the St. Pete race, as well as Scott McLaughlin, who was second, and they docked Will Power, I believe, 15 points. So I guess what happened there was that they either had messed around with some of the software that limits their ability to go push to pass on race start or restarts, or there was some software that was left in place. It's not real clear right now, but clearly they were aware that they had some advantage where they could abuse the push to pass button. And it sounds like Power didn't do it, but then McLaughlin and Newgarden clearly used it. And so, man, harsh penalties though from IndyCar.
Yeah, so Power was docked 10 points. It sounds like they discovered it in morning warm-up. I think they noticed the drivers using it when it was deactivated for the field or something like that. And then I guess they got Newgarden and McLaughlin using it illegally on starts or restarts or both. I guess they wait a lap to activate it, and they noticed these guys using it. So, but yeah, you're right. I mean, super harsh penalty to take to just disqualify them from the race entirely. But I can't really think of a time where we've seen something like this happen before. So I'd imagine they're just trying to set a precedent that, like, you can't be breaking the rules at all, or we're going to come down, you know, we're going to crack down.
Yeah. But it made me kind of laugh. You know, there was all that news at the end of last week or over the weekend where IndyCar has invited Zach Brown to be part of their marketing team. And obviously he's, you know, a wizard with this kind of stuff. And maybe, I doubt it, but maybe he saw this opportunity and said, you know what, let's talk about good marketing and PR for the series. And then McLaren can get a first win if you just go ahead and penalize the owner of the series. I don't know. I'm kind of joking, but the timing is kind of funny.
No, it is kind of funny. I mean, I can't imagine that's actually what's going on, but it's kind of funny.
It is good. I think it is good PR, though, I guess, in a weird kind of way. So,
yeah. I mean, yeah, I guess so. What do they say? Like, I don't know what the phrase, like, all coverage is good coverage or something like that. But yeah, I mean, it's huge. It has huge implications. We're only two races in, but huge implications for the championship standings. When we had originally recorded the end of this episode, we ran through the points, and Newgarden had, I want to say, 80-something, 90-something points. He was the points leader by a decent margin. I don't know if it was quite double digits, but he's dropped from being the points leader after two races to being all the way down 11th with only 34 points, and Dixon now leads the points with 79. So that puts him 45 points off the lead now.
Yeah. Well, you know, when we ran down the points yesterday during recording, you had talked about how Newgarden being in the lead was sort of ominous because he's got all these races coming up that he's excelled at, a lot of ovals. So it's definitely not going to be something that is insurmountable. And I think it's going to be really interesting, you know, just to see, watch these guys, at least Newgarden in particular, try to claw back into this thing.
Yeah, well, it sounds like Team Penske right away decided they weren't going to appeal. They just kind of put their hands up and, you know, metaphorically said, hey, you caught us. So, yeah, I think the team just has to accept the penalty. Joseph himself has to just accept the penalty and, you know, move on with the rest of the season from, you know, what looks like a pretty significant points lead to now pretty significant gap to the points lead.
The thing is, he didn't need to use that push to pass. You know, I'd like to go back and see what the start looked like and what the restarts looked like. But Newgarden dominated the race, completely unnecessary. But still, that doesn't affect, you know, it doesn't change the fact that he abused the rule, or that they abused the rule. It kind of reminds me, I've got a story. I don't know if I ever told you this. When I was racing Formula Fords in a Skip Barber Series race at IRP, they would dock you money if you over revved your, if you know that they had this limiter on the tack. So the highest the tack got, the little red marker would stay there. And I noticed that you could reset it if you reach way back in there. And I was kind of over revving. There was a part of the track where I didn't go to an upshift, and I won the race. I won the race Saturday. I won the race Sunday. But after the race on Sunday, I had, I reset the tack because I was over by a couple hundred RPMs, and then I revved it back up to the normal, what was the red line, the legal red line. And when I came in, one of the officials, the main kind of the driver coach, said, let me see your gloves. And on my right index finger, there was a mark of paint where he had gone in and put paint on the tack reset button. And I was disqualified. Just put my hands up in the air. Put my hands up in the air like Scott McLaughlin. Was like, okay.
Damn. Yep, you got me. Literally caught red-handed, or it, whatever the color of paint was.
Silver-handed. It didn't affect the performance of the car at all. It was just, there was a section where I just didn't want to upshift to fourth, where I just kind of revved it up a couple more hundred RPMs, and I think it would have been a $200 fine, which at the time, obviously, I didn't want to, that was a lot of money. So I might cut that out of the program. I don't know. But
That's pretty good.
Did I ever tell you about that or no?
No, that's cool.
It's such a bummer. So anyway, all right, so why don't we run down the points as they stand right now?
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Obviously, Scott Dixon is in the lead with 79 points. And by the way, Dixon has won 4 out of the last 6 IndyCar races. If you go back to late last season, he won in a very similar fashion to what he did yesterday, or what he did at Long Beach. He won at the Indy Grand Prix, or the GM, whatever the second, you know, the late season race on the road course at Indy was. He won at St. Louis on the oval. And then he also won the race finale, I believe, at Laguna.
Yep. And now he's won again in the second race of the year. So like you said, that puts him the winner of 4 out of the last 6. That's a pretty impressive run. But only 2 of the last 6 are points paying races for this season. The other were last season. So his lead in the championship is only 2 points over Colton Herta, who's now 2nd right there. Definitely. I mean, he's got to be feeling a lot better about his start to the season than last year. It sounded like they were pretty down on their performance last year, but he's off to a good start. And then you've got Pelot hanging around with 67 points to Dixon's 79. O'Ward jumps up to having 64 points, and then Power, even with the 10-point dock, rounds out the top 5 with 59.
Yeah, but more importantly for O'Ward, I mean, not only is he in fourth place and 15 points back, but he's got a win recently, right? They McLaren's first win, and I don't know how long, kind of a retroactive, but after crossing the line in third at St. Pete, he's named the winner. So I guess that's a little bit of a monkey off the back, although sort of.
Yeah, I mean, it's not how you want to it's not how you want to win. I mean, I don't know. It probably doesn't really feel much like a win because he didn't actually cross the line first and go celebrate in victory lane and get handed the trophy and all that. But the record books will have him as the winner from now on. So it is what it is.
Yeah, and that's a nice boost for McLaren, especially after the performance at Long Beach. You know, it was sort of a forgettable weekend other than Porsche, who had a phenomenal race and is back in the car this weekend at Alabama. But all right, so that's the top five. You got Felix Rosenquist now bumped up to sixth with 54 points, only 25 back of the lead, which solid start for Meyer Shank Racing.
Yep, and then Rossi's there in seventh. Kirkwood's eighth in the points. VK is ninth, not bad. Erickson 10th in the points. And how far back is he? Let's see. 42 points back. Yeah.
Yeah, and then Newgarden in 11th. Grosjean 12th with 32 points. Ferrucci 13th. Canapino, Simpson, Graham Rahal, Linus Lundqvist. The shocking thing is we go all the way back to 21st, and Christian Lundgaard is all the way back in 21st. A couple tough races for him, and just, you know, I'm sure they'll turn that around. But that's a little bit of a surprise after two races this year.
Yeah, because he's shown a lot of pace. You know, he's looked really good in both races, but neither of them have really come together, obviously. But yeah, I mean, it's early in the season. We're only two races in. We've got, 15 ahead of us. But yeah, I mean, you know, the drivers and teams, probably they have this stuff in the back of their minds probably every weekend they go to the track. So,
well, the good news for Penske is that they don't have to wait long to try to, you know, make up or atone for the penalties. They're going to be on track here day after tomorrow. So they get to get after it right away. And, I'm sure they'll be right back up at the front or near the front.
Yeah, and I guess actually we should call out. So we did say Newgarden, that drops him from the lead down to 11th, but that drops McLaughlin all the way to 29th in the points behind these guys who have even done, who've only done like one start, you know, with only five championship points. That's it. So, you know, I don't know if he technically DNF'd Long Beach. I think they scored him as running, but 14 laps down with that mechanical. But that, you know, that he finished second to last in that race and then disqualified from St. Pete has him with only 5 points, where the leader of the championship has 79. So that's pretty harsh.
All right, so should we wrap it?
Yeah, I think that's probably about it.
All right, well, that's a wrap then, and we'll be back on the microphone here in a couple days. Thanks for listening.
Over and out.
All right, I'm going to spin this one from a band out of Long Beach, California, appropriately. Sublime, released in 1992, and I'm going to send this out to Team Penske, who just could not resist. It's called Bad Fish.